The five steps to demand generation success. Welcome back to a fresh episode of Breaking B2B. I'm your host, Sam Dunning. And if you want to join thousands of legends enjoying my daily newsletter, checking out past podcast episodes, or to apply to work with us, head over to breakingb2b.com. So today, I've got George Koudonaris joining me. George is host over at the B2B Playbook. We're going to be diving into the five steps to demand gen success, talking about things like, should every B2B company, regardless of your service-based or tech-based, dive into demand gen, George's five-step framework, and how you can get exec buy-in to get a demand gen campaign rolling with a bunch of actionable tips. Breaking B2B is sponsored by Revenue Hero. Did you ever fill in a website inquiry form only to wait hours or even days to hear back from a sales rep? Then comes the endless back and forth trying to schedule a time that works for everyone. It's painful, right? Leads slip through the cracks along with a ton of lost revenue. Revenue Hero fixes this painful process for B2B companies just like yours, allowing prospects to book a time on your sales team's calendar instantly from the website. Behind the scenes, marketing can even route qualified leads to the best sales rep for the job. Hundreds of businesses automate their request a demo or book a call workflow with Revenue Hero, including app queues, Inflection, Ultimate AI, Customer IO, and User Evidence. B2B marketers can see increases in up to 80% of qualified meetings booked. See Revenue Hero in action for yourself today at revenuehero.io. That's revenuehero.io, and grab a free demo. So with that, George, welcome to the show, sir. How are we?
Thank you, Sam. Very, very well. Congratulations on two fronts. First of all, for pronouncing my last name correctly. You actually nailed it. And second of all, for your rebrand, Breaking B2B. It's awesome. I love it. I'm right behind it.
Appreciate it, man. Very kind of you to say. And looking forward to you sharing your wisdom with myself, the audience, and diving in. So with that, we've had a bunch of demand gen folks on the show over the years. We haven't done an episode specifically on it in a long time. So as a bit of a refresh, I know everyone's got their take on what demand generation actually means. I'd love to hear yours, George, to kick things off on maybe a one or two line of what the flip is demand gen in your perspective.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I mean, some will define demand generation as lead generation activities. Others are shifting a little bit more towards branding. But for me, demand generation is a go-to-market strategy that builds an intense desire in your dream customer to purchase from you. It's comprised of two parts, demand creation and demand capture. Capturing demand is targeting that 3% of the market that is ready to buy from you right now. And creating demand is about building relationships with the 97% of the market that isn't in buy mode right now, but it's all about getting them to know, like, and trust you. So when they are ready to buy, they come to you over the competition.
Very succinct. Love that. So with that setting the scene, is demand generation something that every B2B company should be looking at, regardless of where they're at, i.e. startup or more mature established company?
Look, I would say yes, everyone should look at it, but how much time and how many resources you pour into it will depend on what phase you're at and the kind of business that you're in. So look, most businesses, when they start out, going to be trying to capture that demand that's out there already. So trying to find those companies that 3% of the that are in that 3% of the market that are ready to buy right now, the ones who are actively buying. And so, you know, they're doing outbound, they're doing things like running Google ads, they're doing all these things to try and target these people who are looking to buy right now. And that's absolutely where they should be focusing their attention. They should be focusing their attention on people who are ready to buy right now. Because if we don't have customers, then like, what the hell are we doing as a business, particularly in that early phase? But the earlier you can start appealing to that 97% of the market and getting them to know who you are, what you stand for, why you're actually a fantastic fit for them, the better off you're going to be as you scale. So I've worked in-house a number of times. My bread and butter was performance marketing, which means capturing demand. Like I thought I was a legend at it. I thought I knew everything about marketing, to be honest, like running performance marketing. I thought I was the king. I thought I could put a dollar in, get a $1.50 out every time and scale to the moon. But I was pretty humbled on quite a few occasions, Sam. Just over time, initially having fantastic traction, acquiring customers for a great cost per lead, a great cost per acquisition. And then inevitably, as we went to scale more, we needed more volume. And the more we scaled, the more competitive things became, the more our costs went up, and the harder it got to scale sustainably, because we're just competing for the same, basically like the same size of the market, except we're trying to take more of it. It's like you have a set size of the pie and you're trying to take a bigger and bigger slice. But guess what? So are your competitors. So yeah, you have to be able to scale beyond that 3%. And that's when I really started learning, I think, about a more holistic, encompassing demand generation strategy, which is let's look to that other 97% too. And Sam, I've actually got one more piece of research, which I love referencing, which I think really nails that point home on why we need to get in front of that 97%. And it's some research out of Bain & Company. And they basically say that 80% of vendors will not consider you as an option if they haven't heard about you before they start looking for a solution. So if I'm in the market for SEO services and I decide this morning, you know what, I'm going to start Googling SEO services and Breaking B2B comes up, this statistic, this research shows that we will not consider Breaking B2B unless we had heard about them before. So it's not only that 3% of the market that's available to you, it's actually a much smaller component. It's something like 0.6%, which is why it's like trying to find a needle in a haystack. Mm. And it's why it's important to get in front of people as early as you can in the journey.
Got it. So there's a few points that I'd be interested to break down before we dive into your 5Bs framework to get success with demand gen. So you said something interesting there about your own experience. And I've been much the same, George, right? When I've worked at different companies and I've thought I can splash a ton of cash into paid media, whether that's sponsored ads, paid search or different forms, and thinking, yep, month one, month two, the leads are flowing, we're getting some sales in. And then from my experience anyway, when you solely rely on paid as a channel, it seems to go up and down and you seem to have peaks and troughs, and it's not really sustainable, like you say. But something you said interesting was as you scale, demand gen becomes more relevant, more important, which totally makes sense, right? So let's pretend we're in a mature market. So we're in a category that's known. So for me, that's SEO and websites. People know that category exists. For someone else, that might be a CRM category or whatever it is. So we're in a mature market. People know what we do. The chances are, to start with, that 3% that are in market to buy could be a lot of people, even if we're in a very niche specific sector. So in the CRM space, let's say we focus specifically on accounting companies that are CRM, that 3% could still be thousands and thousands of businesses that are after what we need. But as we grow and as we scale, I suppose that amount of in-market potential buyers, potential clients gets smaller and smaller as we become bigger and we start capturing all that demand, whether that's with SEO, paid search, other channels. So then that's when demand gen, kind of getting in front of those prospects, educating them on the problems we solve, how we help, etc., is more important. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's absolutely fair to say. Look, as I said, in those initial stages, you want to be capturing as much demand out there as possible, but inevitably, it's not even so much about like you're going to run out of customers that are there to buy from you. It's when you start out capturing demand, people typically start like with, you know, targeting long tail searches. So people try and niche their business down as much as possible to appeal to a small segment. So we're not trying to compete with the big fish. You know, it's, I suppose, like what HubSpot tried to do to take on Salesforce initially positioning themselves as marketing automation software. It's like what Pipedrive did to try and find their position in the market too, positioning themselves as the CRM for salespeople. You really want to try and, I suppose if you go down that path, it becomes very, very important at some stage to scale beyond it. And people are going to be targeting those high intent keywords, which are long tail, but you're going to run out of those people that are searching, you know, CRM systems for salespeople. You're going to be running out of those people that are searching CRM for marketing automation. And at that point, you start actually bidding on and competing for more generic terms, terms that are a bit wider, that aren't as niche for you. And that's where the costs start getting out of control. And that's when you start bidding on and trying to compete for people that might not be your ideal clients. And that's where you start to run into trouble.
Got it. So with that setting the scene, let's dive into, if you can share, George, your five-step BEES framework. And I would love to get stuck into the five key foundational points and share some practical tips as we go.
Yeah, for sure. So it's our five B's framework for demand generation. In particular, it probably has a heavier emphasis on demand creation because we think there's just not a lot of information around how to do that in a systematic way. So the first B is what we call be ready. And that's all about really, truly, deeply understanding your customers. So you need to know who your best customers are. You need to really understand their pain points, understand who the buying committee is, what their buying journey looks like, where they hang out online and offline, who influences them in their purchasing decisions. It's then incredibly important, particularly in a saturated market, as we just referenced, for marketers to really position their brands as a total no-brainer in the mind of their dream customer. So using that kind of big fish, small pond method of positioning is a really great way of doing that. So again, we use that example of how Pipedrive positioned themselves as the CRM for salespeople. That is a great example of that. So be ready is really about getting those foundations. And for a lot of marketers, what that looks like in a lot of businesses, it's about, again, defining who those best customers are, understanding them as deeply as possible, and setting that really firm foundation for the second stage, which is what we call be helpful. Before we get on to that, did you have any questions there at all, Sam?
Yeah, so I don't want to make, I mean, some of this stuff we've covered with guests like Ryan Paul Gibson that I know you've had on your show as well when it comes to B2B customer research. And we've had other folks kind of went how to define your best customers, understanding kind of their buying journey and their buying habits and all that kind of things. But are there any, I suppose, any lesser known tips, George, that you recommend when it comes to defining your ideal fit clients and their buying habits or journeys? Any, I guess, high level points that we should consider on that step one?
I suppose this begins with that 80-20 rule, applying that to your business. So which 20% of customers are driving 80% of the output. And that might not be revenue. It's about like driving forward what's most important to your business at that point in time. So for a business, it might be like potential for growth. It might be a business that is more profitable or a particular segment of the market that's more profitable than another. Mm-hmm. So really making sure that you do that work and actually sitting down with leadership and sales to say, okay, like based on the data, who are our best customers? And if you actually go ahead and you survey each of the different departments and ask them, chances are you're going to get really different answers. Like typically, you know, developers, they hate enterprise, because enterprise always wants so many things like custom built, but salespeople might like it because the commissions are really, really great. You know, you get really different answers. And so you need to come to a consensus, not just from running the data on your own, but actually having that conversation with everyone. And yeah, we find when people go through that process, it actually initiates a much, much bigger conversation that the business needs to have.
That's so true, actually. Just thinking about businesses that I've been involved in, sometimes what you think are the best categories or sectors that you worked with, when you actually look at the data, i.e. what was the most profitable, what was the quickest turnaround time, who were the easiest to work with, it's sometimes quite the opposite to what you think in your head. So until you crunch that with the rest of your team, look at the hard facts and look at the data and also discuss with your team kind of what it was like working with them. It's quite interesting what comes up, I found.
And pulling sales and leadership into this process too of, you know, sales have the most time with customers and ideally you get to speak to those customers yourselves. But, you know, if you're taking those insights from sales, like loop them in as much of this as possible, because this demand generation process works best when marketing and sales are on the same page. So I think taking them on the journey right from the very beginning is a really great place to set yourself up for success.
Any core points when you say best customers, like in my head, that would drive things like drive the most profitable revenue, are enjoyable to work with, and we can kind of deliver well and fairly quickly. What would you say are the core points, that kind of stuff, or a bit more?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, can we nail it down to a particular industry or segment? And if so, if we were going to target more people like this, because that's the goal, like how big is that market? So making sure that it's big enough to hit your goals for the next, you know, 6-12 months, whatever it might be, ensuring that it's a big enough market for you to do that.
Yep.
I think it's incredibly important too. So working backwards from business goals, I think, is something that people really need to do when conducting that exercise.
Nice. That's be ready. What was step two, sir?
Be helpful. So be ready was about setting those foundations, deeply understanding the customer. Step two is about being helpful. So that's, now we've defined and understood that audience, we're going to try and develop relationships with them, with the buying committee, with really helpful and educational content. So this content, I think, should genuinely try and make your dream customers' lives better. It's not product focused content, but it really helps them in their role. It should be educational and it should be entertaining. I suppose it's exactly what we're trying to do with the B2B playbook. Ideally, even before people work with us, we want to make marketing managers' lives easier. We want them to do better in their job before they get to that point where they're ready to work with us. So, I mean, it's really, really important in this stage to, I think, have your content driven by true subject matter experts. You know, buyers are really smart. If you're getting a content done by a freelancer, I think that just doesn't fly anymore. You know, especially when it's like you're trying to market to engineers and you have the in-house marketer or a freelancer who's never been an engineer trying to write a technical piece, like then that's never ever going to land with them. So making sure you have subject matter experts doing that and making sure that it's mapped to our favorite framework for content called the 5 Stages of Awareness. It's really the best content framework that we found that very closely aligns with people's buying journey. It takes someone from being unaware that they even have a problem that you can help them with to being led to the logical conclusion that you're the perfect solution for them. And then it's about distributing that content as much as possible, like leaving that information for people so they can take their own journey. It's still deliberate in the way that you're doing it. You've still got that content to answer their question at every stage, but you're making it available to them to consume in their own time.
Gotcha. So when it comes to creating helpful and educational content, your idea of what that means might be completely different to mine. Have you, if any business is thinking, quite like the sound of this demand gen, and I think we should start getting in front of our best customers that we've defined from step one of Be Ready, I want to start putting out some content, some media that's going to be helpful in education to those target prospects. What's the best place to get started in your view?
I think we actually really align with this. So it's towards the end of the journey. So people who are what you would call like product aware or most aware, people are actively looking for solutions. So that's when you want to get together, your comparison pages, your case studies, your social proof, all that stuff that shows like why you're the best fit for someone, that answers any doubts, any objections that they might have, and that gives them that final nudge to take that action, is where we would recommend people start, because we're targeting people who are probably somewhat familiar with your brand,
right,
and considering you against other people. And then we would again make our way further up the funnel, which is where we're looking at solution aware content, which is targeting people who are starting to explore and evaluate different solutions. And then eventually we would target people who are problem aware. So at this point, they're just kind of exploring like what this problem even is that you help them solve and all the different ways to solve it. Like if someone, you know, wants to solve the issue of demand generation in their business, they could try and do SEO. They could hire a freelancer. They could hire someone else in-house, or they can come to us, the B2B incubator, and train up someone in-house to help them do it. Like, there's so many different ways of approaching that problem. And so having content that helps guide them through that is really important too. All the way up to the top where someone is unaware and they don't even know that demand generation is an issue for their business.
Give me a quick idea, George, of, yeah, we are aligned starting at the bottom of the funnel, kind of people most likely to be ready or close to ready to investing in your offer. When it comes to that bottom of the funnel opportunities, how are you targeting them from a demand gen perspective? Are you doing like a retargeting play where you see people that have visited your website and maybe key pages like pricing alternative page multiple times, and then you're serving them ads, say on LinkedIn, that relate to that? Or have you got a slightly different approach to kind of targeting those bottom of the funnel most likely to buy prospects first?
Yeah, that's right. So we'll look at retargeting and use that as a method. We'll also look at identifying companies based on reports from like Clearbit. So getting the anonymous people that we haven't identified, seeing which companies are visiting key pages, expressing intent, and then we'll upload those as like a company list, pardon me, to try and get as many impressions in front of them of these of this key information that reflects where they are in their journey. We do still push them content that's like further up the funnel as well, because okay, hey, people bounce around in different states of awareness.
Yeah, makes sense. And any ideas in terms of when you're going higher up the funnel, perhaps folks that never heard of our brand, but we believe they fit our target client persona, sectors, etc., that you define in stage one, what are you doing when it comes to kind of targeting and serving them content?
Yeah. So, I mean, look, on the organic side, basically we just try and cycle through those five stages of awareness throughout the week. Monday starts at unaware, Tuesday problem aware, Wednesday solution aware, and so on. And so we're just giving everyone the opportunity to consume where they are at different stages, because you can't control it. As you've pointed out, when you're using paid media, you have a bit more of an idea as to where someone is in that phase. Sorry, would you mind repeating that question one more time, Sam? I just lost my train of thought.
Yeah, all good. So I was saying, essentially, folks that do not know our company yet, but are basically, we believe they fit our target market, like ideal customer profile in the segments and sectors and businesses we like to serve and that we want to be doing business with that we define in stage one. You mentioned some channels there. I was just wondering what you recommend when it comes to getting in front of those folks, because they're probably not that likely to buy for the foreseeable future, but we want to start educating them and serving them some helpful content, just how we can get started on that play.
Yeah. So I guess I kind of cover what we would do on the organic side, which is really cycling through those five stages of awareness. But if you're targeting those audiences that I suppose you would say are cold to you, they're unaware of you, it would be about getting that unaware, problem aware, and solution aware content in front of them. And so that's content that is going to lead them on that journey to realizing that this is a problem really worth addressing and getting them to start exploring some solutions.
Gotcha.
As to that target list that you might be working with, I know some people like to go quite broad, and that certainly works on platforms like Meta. But I think when it comes to LinkedIn and B2B, we like to go quite narrow, look for other signals that indicate that these people would be a good fit, that they are more likely to enter the market than someone else, rather than starting with like an audience of 50,000 people, running a few ads to them and hoping someone clicks it to then retarget them. I mean, this is B2B. Like, we've got to get in front of people like a bunch of times to even make them care about what we're selling.
Messy as you like is B2B, that's for sure. There's never a linear path to buying, certainly in the few years that I've been in the game. For any scrappy startups, George, often like to give advice for perhaps there's marketers that are maybe a team of one or a team of two, maybe they're bootstrapped or maybe they've got very limited funds to work with.
When it comes to doing some of that early stage stuff, you've mentioned kind of creating early stage problem aware content that kind of shares this is the juicy problem we fix, and this is kind of a bit more about how you can start doing it yourself or thinking about doing it yourself or why you should be aware of it and the implications of the problem, whatever. How do you recommend folks go about implementing that in a way that's going to be best use of their time? Because I appreciate when you've got channels like LinkedIn Organic, LinkedIn Paid, Meta, and more, could be podcasts, could be YouTube, so many options when it comes to actually creating that media and distributing it. Have you found any way for starting, let's say, on a lightweight scale, but that's going to have impact, that's worked quite well?
Yeah, absolutely. So we actually ran an experiment like this in public where we ran ads for ourselves for the very first time using the exact framework that, you know, we use when we work with other businesses. And the goal is, of course, try and get a return as soon as possible. When you're a small team and you're just investing in a channel, you want to see that return. So we had really what started out as just a $500 investment. And we made a very targeted list of people who had interacted with our assets on LinkedIn or interacted with our website, had showed a lot of intent there, uploaded that list of companies. And then we showed them that product aware, most aware content, which was all about, you know, this is our program. This is who we are. This is how we can help you. These are the results of working with us. And this is why you should take action now. And so because we were targeting a small audience, we were able to get a number of impressions across these people for a low cost. You know, we're getting in front of these people 10 times or so. And it proved like very, very fruitful for us. Like we got a 38-to-1 return on ad spend from that experiment, which is fantastic. And what that enabled us to do was then take the money we made from that and then expand it into reaching newer, less red hot audiences, people who are like cold to lukewarm, and then repeat the process.
Nice. Cool, man.
So, sorry, I would probably just jump in and say, like, make sure you have something like Clearbit installed on your website. Get their free report. It's fantastic. It will show you which companies are visiting your site in real time. You can then just scrape that list of those that are in your ICP. You can cross-reference it with people that might have been following your company page or viewing you on LinkedIn Sales Navigator, viewing your profile, whatever signals you can get that makes you think, these people are in my orbit, get those and start with those. Don't leave it up to LinkedIn's retargeting system. Like, upload that account list, target their buying committee, target that champion, and target that decision maker and go hard after them.
There's probably even some organic stuff you can do with that, right? Like you can do pay, definitely, like you said, like that makes perfect sense. And I'd imagine if you continually see a certain company flagging up on your website, and then maybe you're even connected to, let's say you go after VPs of marketing as one of your personas, and you see that they've flicked on your profile, engaged with your content, like it makes sense to send them a direct message, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And you can test being, I suppose, like more direct, like, hey, you know, I saw that you were checking XYZ out, you know, is there something I can help you with? Or like have a resource that helps them nail down the problem that you've, you know, guessing that they're trying to solve. At the end of the day, we want to make contact with these people. And so another great way of doing it, I'm sure you've used this too, Sam, is if it's like a VP of marketing saying like, hey, we have this podcast, we'd love to have you on it. And it's a fantastic way to make that a really warm connection. It doesn't have to be a podcast. It can be like, hey, I'm putting together some market research. We've done that before too. And we would love to speak to you and ask you some questions about what's happening in the industry and your business in particular. Again, another great way to develop a relationship with people.
Good stuff. We've got to give a huge shout out to Factors.ai. In B2B, there's a few harsh truths. At best, only 4% of your website visitors convert into sales calls, and less than 1% of the outbound account list ends up making a purchase. By the time people request a demo or call, they're already late in their stages of evaluation.
Smart B2B companies don't wait for people to magically buy. Instead, they expand their sales pipeline by tapping into intent signals. Factors.ai identifies prospects showing buying intent on your website, LinkedIn, and G2. Prospect into high intent accounts at the moment they're buying. Make it easy for your team to generate revenue and get more from every dollar spent. The best part, you can attribute and track everything seamlessly through the Factors.ai platform. Don't miss out. Grab a free trial today and start maximizing your revenue over at Factors.ai.
Let's proceed on to stage three.
Yeah, so stage three is be seen. So as a quick recap, stage one was be ready, deeply understanding the customer, laying that foundation. Stage two is be helpful, which is like, let's create really helpful educational content that maps the buying journey. Stage three, be seen, is about let's just get this in front of people and make it go faster. How do we accelerate this process of building relationships with people who we want to buy from us? And that's where paid media really comes in handy. Paid media is there to push this really helpful content to people who are in our ICP and are showing signs of potentially buying from us. It's also where we would really start to take our product ads more seriously as well. So, of course, we want to be very helpful in the content that we're pushing people, but at the end of the day, we've still got to educate people on what the benefits are of our product. What are the features that enable that benefit? Because at this stage, people are considering that, and its features are important to people at this stage. So making sure that you have product ads that do that education, that reflect the voice of the customer, is really, really important in this process. And then taking a bit more of a focused account-based marketing approach, like we just spoke about, Sam, and you should do that no matter, I suppose, what channel it is that you're using. We spoke about how you can do it using LinkedIn ads by uploading a very targeted company list. You can complement that with work on organic by doing that, by reaching out to people and DMing them and inviting them on your podcast. There's a bunch of ways of doing that, but it's about identifying people with high intent and trying to accelerate that demand as much as possible with whatever channels you have at your disposal.
I like it. So yeah, more of the same of what we're discussing just now, and sounds like also going a bit more intense on perhaps a product focus. So giving that target market a bit more of a detailed look into how that product is going to help them improve their business, whatever that focus is.
That's correct. And look, I know we discussed some of that stuff in Be Helpful, and I think it might have been because of a particular question that we were discussing, but we tend to not talk about paid ads until be seen, until part three, because we want to make sure that people do that work to really understand their customer, that they are creating genuinely helpful educational content programs that are mapped to buying journeys. And then I think for a lot of people, it really clarifies what role paid media should play in the first place. Paid media is to get our stuff seen by people. And the question is, well, what do we want them to see? Well, we want them to see all the super helpful stuff that we've developed in parts one and two, be ready and be helpful. And then, of course, we also want to start showing them more about our product and features and so on.
This is a tricky one. I'd find it a tricky question. How do you define what actually is proven helpful or useful content to your ICP? How do you know that it's making an impact and it's doing its job?
Great question. So we look at leading indicators and lagging indicators. Leading indicators, they're the ones that are going to tell you whether or not people actually care about this. If you're marketing to marketers, everyone says self-reported attribution, people filling out the how did you first hear about us form, and they're saying people will mention your content and say, oh, I heard you on this podcast, or this piece really resonated with me on LinkedIn, and that's what made me book a demo. The reality is, like most industries, it's sales. They're going to talk to sales, and you have to get sales to ask them, like, what made them want to take this meeting with you? And it's there that you're effectively looking for signs of life that people are mentioning this really helpful content. So they might say, oh, like I first came across you at this, it might even be like a trade show, or I first came across you on LinkedIn, or I follow your founder on LinkedIn, or I've been seeing your ads for the last 6 months, or whatever it might be. That's a really, really key piece. But even before that, you can start to look at, again, using just Clearbit's free report. Are we getting more people from our ICP to our website this month compared to last month? And keep track of that. If we are, then we know that it's going to be really a result of that helpful piece of content. I suppose it depends like what else it is that you're running at that time, but you sure. really just want to be tracking, like, are we getting more people to our assets? Are more people from our ICP following us on LinkedIn? Are they engaging more with our videos? Are they watching more of our videos or less? So if you're chopping up bits of a subject matter expert, running through something on a podcast, and you put that out there, are people watching it to 25%, 50%, 75%? These are all good indicators to look at as to whether or not we are actually starting to make an impact and whether or not people like what we're doing.
Perhaps you can do a brief case study example. So I think I'm quite a good guinea pig because I've never done any paid media really on LinkedIn. So I was thinking, as one of our next experiments, as we like to do, to basically boost some of my organic posts. So I've never done, like I say, really messed around with it. Maybe when it first came out, thought leadership ads, for example, and never really invested in company ads, certainly not for breaking B2B. What would be like the most logical step for someone like me that's never got into it, i.e. a quick win to get those ads, I suppose, in front of some of these tactics that we've shared to actually make sure that, say, I was working with similar to what you had, a $500, $700 budget. Should I do exactly what you said just now, or do you think someone like me should take a slightly different approach?
Yeah, look, I would do exactly what we did because it requires more work on the front end. It's scrappy, but you're focusing your resources as much as possible. So I don't know if you've been tracking which companies are visiting your website. I know it's a newer website, so I don't know how many that you have there.
Yep.
But if you do have a decent amount, you don't need a lot. Like it might be 50 companies that fit your ICP with really high intent. Why not target them with your product ads, with your thought leadership content that's matched to those five stages of awareness? Target them with all that content, get in front of them 10 times in 30 days and see what comes from it. Reach out to them because worst case, at that point where you reach out and you make contact, because I know you're not afraid to reach out to people and talk to them, Sam, you're going to learn a hell of a lot about why maybe the timing isn't right or maybe why they are going a different way.
Mm.
And then you just feed that information back into, okay, well, let's go again. But start with that super targeted list from that Clearbit visitor report, overlap it with your ICP. You've got great content as well. So you've got a lot of people viewing your own LinkedIn. Check out through LinkedIn Sales Navigator who's been viewing your profile recently. That overlaps with your ICP. Cross-reference it with that Clearbit list and get people who have much higher intent and focus on them.
Nice. It's sound advice. And I suppose everything you're recommending, George, is useful, not just because, yeah, you start with the bottom of the funnel and you work your way up and you start with prospects or folks that are most likely to need what you do. But even if we do all this and some of them don't come inbound, it's positioning your offer or your brand rather as a helpful company, right? So even if these people don't ever have a conversation with you in the foreseeable future, they've got a good impression of you. So they're like, well, this company or this person's been really helpful. They've given me some new ideas. They've shared some stories. They've given me some useful content or media. So I suppose it also opens up opportunities for them to then recommend you, whether that's in like private communities or when they speak to their friends face to face. So it's, I can only really see good things coming of it, even if the direct prospect doesn't actually end up being a customer.
Yeah, absolutely. And the more you do this stuff, I mean, like for us, this framework isn't a one and done. It's something you should just go through again and again for your company, like constantly go back, speak to your customers, review who your ICP is, review your helpful content, add to it, you know, adjust your targeting and all of that kind of stuff, and go through and do it again. It's not a one and done process. And what you're also going to be able to do is over time, as you go through and do that, you're going to really be able to identify what qualities indicate that someone is in market versus one that's not. And then that's like one more layer of targeting that you're going to be able to add into your initial list of people. So for example, if a marketing team grows from one person to two to three, that's normally a good indicator that they need to start getting a demand generation program ready in-house. And so these are more signals that we can then compile, qualify companies who are showing these signals and add them to our list of people that we're targeting to make sure that we're using our resources as efficiently as possible.
Nice. Let's move on to stage four.
Yeah, look, I think we can go through stages four and five a little faster. Look, stage four is what we call be better. This is really about optimizing your workflow now that you have those fundamental three Bs in place. It's where you do things like A/B testing, you know, CRO, advanced content repurposing, advanced tracking and reporting, email nurturing, you know, leveraging CRMs and data, using partners and affiliates. For some people, partners and affiliates might come in earlier. But it's really about doing those things that once you have a good set of customers to work off, once you have those fundamentals in place, these are what's going to get you those incremental improvements over time. I think they're actually the things that marketers think of first when they talk about marketing.
Yeah.
And for us, we used to as well. And then there's nothing that makes you more honest as a marketer than being in B2B, I think. And then we realized that this stuff needs to come much later after those fundamentals.
We see it time and again. And it's like sometimes when folks will come to us and they'll say like, oh, I need to improve the conversion rate on my website. Or I think I need a new website redesign because we're not converting enough leads. And then you look at their traffic and they're getting like 100 visits per month. And it's like, you don't need CRO. You need more qualified traffic coming to this website. It's not a CRO job. Your website's just fine.
Yeah, exactly. And then that starts that whole conversation of, well, who even are our ideal customers?
Yep.
All right. Like it has to go so far back. But how can you build out the right pages for people and get them to rank for the right terms if they don't know who their ideal customers are?
Yeah. Yeah, it's often the foundational stuff that gets neglected. I completely agree. That's stage four, be better. And then what was the last step,
George? Yeah. Stage five is what we call be the best. And that's where we just went through like a whole lot of tactics that we think are normally reserved for big players in the market.
Got it.
And we had a bit of fun with that season and looking at how can we start to work them into our marketing as like a small team. So things like, neuromarketing, neuroscience, you know, basically like behavioral psychology. How can we work that into our everyday marketing to make it even easier for people to say yes to us? So we covered a range of topics in there. But yeah, look, the 5Bs framework, very much designed to be worked through in order, as I'm sure you can see.
Nice, man. So for anyone that's been tuning in and thinking, I'd love to put this into play, but I feel there may be a bit of pushback from management, from my exec team, because they've never done it before. They might not even know what demand gen is. They might think, let's call it the old way, whether that's just relying on paid ads, cold outbound, similar campaigns is all we've known and done to grow to date. Any tips on getting buy-in with our influencers, our exec team and C-suite?
Yeah, I think you got to speak there for it. So I know getting buy-in for demand generation programs are a huge hurdle, but you got to present a business case as to why that is the right option for you. But even before that, you've got to show that why what you're doing currently, the status quo, why that's not working. And so if you can show them forecasts of what's going to happen if you just continue your existing activities, you know, that could be like your CPLs or cost per acquisition getting to levels that are out of control. It could be that you have a very low MQL to SQL rate. All of that stuff is really, really important to show them. And even going as deep as saying, look, these leads that are being sent to sales, we're hitting our MQL targets, but the conversion rate is so, so low that it's actually hurting the business and it's not sustainable for the business because sales are spending time on these leads, calling them. Most of them aren't picking up, and the ones who are don't want to talk to us, have no idea who we are. So work with whoever it is that you need to work with to make that business case. You should have access to your advertising platforms and data. You might need to speak to sales, and you might need to speak to finance as well to get a real understanding as to like how much is it actually costing us to acquire a customer with our current strategy. So then if we can do that, we go, well, then what's the alternative? What's the path forward? And then that's when you start to point to them to the research of, look, this is the way it is. That's what the research shows. And then, sorry, can you hear me, Sam?
Yeah, you're back now, George. We lost you for a second, but you're back now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry, I was saying after you really make that business case, then when you're presenting the path forward, you show them, look, this is the way it is because only 3% of the market is in market to buy at any given time. That's what the research shows. Of that 3%, you have that other research from Bain that shows 8 out of 10 won't even consider you if they haven't heard about you. And so really what we need to do is we need to get in front of people before they're ready to buy. And we need to have a method for doing that. And that's what demand generation ultimately is. And then we're not proposing to completely overhaul everything that marketing and sales are doing. Say, let's create a pilot program. We're going to pick one segment, one marketer, one salesperson, and we're going to build out a pilot program together to essentially run through the first 3 Bs of our 5 Bs. These are the leading indicators of success. These are the lagging indicators that we ultimately want to achieve. This is the timeline we expect it to happen. These are the people, resources, investment needed to make that happen. And just make it as painless as possible for them. This stuff can be done on really a shoestring budget. So have that plan in place, make it a no-brainer for them, present the plan very clearly for them.
Yeah. Sound advice. What are your thoughts on doing something small scale? Let's say you get quite a lot of pushback. What are your thoughts on doing something small scale yourself? Because I can get away with it. So probably so can you, being founders of our own business. So I'm very much like, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is for permission. So if I was a marketer in an org that was just dead set, ideally a startup that was just dead set against this, I'd probably just start doing something low key myself. I'd make a list of maybe top 10 accounts, and maybe we're going after CMOs, VPs of marketing, I don't know, CTOs, whatever. Probably just start my own very simple podcast, invite them on, and it would be literally focused on the niche, i.e. how, let's say we're in, I guess go back to CRM for accounting, like how to nail your CRM as an accountant, whatever, let's say it's something like that. And I just started inviting those folks onto the show and low key, just doing that in my own time, build some relationships and prove this stuff works. I think that's how I'd get buy-in, but I suppose I'm a bit of a rebel and I like to do my own thing. That's why I run my own business, so I can get away with it. What are your thoughts on that?
Look, I like it. I would do it too. But the reality is so many of these activities that we've spoken about in this 5Bs framework, marketers are doing some version of them already.
Mm.
So I think all you really need to get a pilot program off the ground is to align with one salesperson on just that initial step of, can we together define just like who your best customers are? Like, what's that one segment? What's that list of accounts that we would really like to go after? And can we do that together? And that marketer is probably already doing things like creating content. Mm. They're already probably doing things like maybe running some form of account-based marketing or running some form of paid media.
Yep.
So it's just a matter of like just really fine tuning what they're doing already and just making sure that the resource that they're dedicating it is to a market small enough that we can have an impact with, you know, the small amount of resources that we are dedicating to it. Which is why like we can't go and take on like a whole market in a pilot program because like we just don't have the resources to do it. It's about getting your message in front of people enough times to build relationships with them. We just got to have enough like time, money, resources to do that. So work out what that is.
Legend. George, really enjoyed the episode, man. Thanks very much for sharing your framework, making it actionable, providing real examples. So with that, please do tell us more about how everyone tuning in can learn about the B2B playbook, your business, and anything you'd like to guide the audience to.
Yeah, definitely. Look, probably easiest thing is to just Google the B2B playbook or just go to the B2B playbook.com. You can follow me on LinkedIn too, George Koutinaris, but Sam, you're going to have to link to that in the show notes because no one can spell my last name and you know, that's fine. But look, if you go to the B2B playbook, you'll find us there. And make sure you pick up our 5Bs framework. We share it all for free with everyone. Every week it's there for you to consume. A lot of marketers have taken it for free. They've reported back to us with like fantastic results and we're really, really proud of it. So please go and take it as your own.
Legend. I'll put all of those links in the show notes below. And I want to thank you once again, George, really enjoyed the chat.
Thank you so much for having me, Sam. Really appreciate it.
No worries, dude. We've got to give a quick shout out to our sponsors, Revenue Hero and Factors AI, for sponsoring Breaking B2B. And as always, if you want to join thousands of legends enjoying our daily newsletter, past episodes, or to apply to work with us, head over to breakingb2b.com. And we've got to give a big shout out to you, the audience, for watching or listening in today. And we'll catch you on the next episode for more no BS actionable B2B marketing tips to grow your business, grow your revenue. Catch you on the next one.